What does putting the fun back into brick and mortar retail look like? And how do we do that? Welcome to Tell Me Something Good About Retail, the podcast of The Retail Doctor. I'm your host, Bob Phibbs. On this episode, I'm talking to Tom Shea of Profits Plus about making retail fun again and selling from an investment standpoint rather than the heart. Welcome, Tom Shea, Principal Profits Plus.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm well. So who are you and what the hell do you have to do with retail?
Oh, let's see. Well, my name is Tom Shea. I'm a fourth generation independent retailer. So all I've ever known my whole life is being a retail owner. You know, people would pay to hear you tell your stories. And I go, pay? This is good. I like money. That's right. That's why I'm a retailer. That's right. And that's where I wandered off from being an owner of my store and started doing the stuff that I do.
So did you end up selling the store or?
Yes. Sold it. Over the years, there were eight, not all at the same time. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different cities. Wow. But our stores were in, as you go through the four generations of my family, I sold it. It's not too far from my office as to where the last one I owned is still there and doing its thing.
Well, let's go back. So I know that on your website, you talk about how you are a, what is it? Fifth generation?
Fourth. I'm fourth.
Fourth. So what was your, you know, growing up as part of a retail family, I imagine you worked a lot for free. There's that. But also
yes.
Connection with your generations. That's always the part that I think is so fascinating, that you really grew up with this merchant mentality, which I think is sorely missing in 2019.
That's true. It is missing. I did grow up there. It was my family. Great-grandfather decided he was working for a person who had a general store 1919, 1920, somewhere in that neck of the woods. He suggested to the man, let's put gas pumps in. It's a general store. Car will pull up. He says, you know, I think cars are going to hang on here. When they stop, someone will get out, come in and get something cold to drink, see what we have to sell. The other one of us in the store, go out and fill up their car. Guy says no. So in secret, my great-grandfather trots across the street and buys the piece of land. The last remaining person of my grandfather's generation, my great-uncle Van, loved to tell the story over and over and over. I was just always fascinated. He says, I remember as a little boy being in the store and the man looking across the street and saying, what's that going on over there? And he says, Daddy wouldn't say a thing because he knew if he told him, he'd fire him. Till one day he said, here's my 2 weeks notice. I'm leaving. The guy says, where are you going? What strange you would ask. You know, that piece of land across the street with that building going up? And the building was a store on the first floor and the family residence on the top floor.
Right, classic,
says,
right, of course.
Okay, there's going to be a sign out there. And it's going to say G.W. Brown. My great-grandfather was George Walter Brown. 3-in-1, groceries, convenience, and gasoline. And that's where it started, a store that downstairs, let's see, the back of the store, there was a kitchen. And I remember this so well because after my great-grandparents retired from the store, they had the best business succession plan anyone could have. 5 sons, okay? One of them's going to kick in, right? And it was my grandfather, and my great uncle went to Kansas and had a store, and my other great uncle stayed in the same city, Fort Smith, Arkansas, and opened up a store 18 blocks away. So that's kind of where it all got started for my family. And my family lived up over that old store until 1956.
See, I think that's what's so great. And if I can, Tom, I think what makes that story so exciting for me is it's so much different than people coming to market with some things now, which always seem like a solution looking for a problem, right? It's like, you know, we've got an Internet of Things tea kettle. It's like, how does that help? Well, you can turn it on from anywhere. It's like, dude, you still have to fill it with water. How is this helping? Versus, you know, there's a new market. And I think with these cars, if we added gas to this, and you had that whole thing, you saw the opportunity as an entrepreneur and then built on it. And I think that happens still today, right? I mean, people who see that underserved market, I mean, that's the recipe for success, isn't it?
It is the secret to success. Unfortunately, there are too many people today. I mean, God knows I love these people. I'm one of them. That's all I know how to do in life is to be a retailer. I mean, I tell folks, I have no hobbies, no hobbies whatsoever. I'm just fascinated by retailing. I just love to go into stores and look at it and get ideas. I love to go into the big box stores and steal ideas. But the key to my family was we did not fall in love with anything we sold. And yet you see people who get into clothes stores because they're a clothes horse, or people who own a pet store because they love pets, or the bicycle industry. It's like, if you're not a heavy duty bicycle rider, then don't ever think about opening up a bicycle shop. That's kind of the mentality. And I'm going, we were apparently the oddballs. Our thoughts were, here's a store we can buy, of which we never opened our own store. We always bought them because the philosophy was, we can look at your store, see the opportunities, see the problems, and know that all we have to do is tune it from the word go, as compared to, gee, I hope I picked the right location, the right type.
I love that. Well, a lot of what you're saying, I apologize, I didn't mean to step over you. I love a lot of what you're saying about that. Part of the reason I wanted you to have on the podcast is you're a numbers guy, and that's the way I look at it. It's like, if I buy this for this, and I sell it, and I market up to this, and I get this, I succeed. That's very different than, I just love this new line of chia foam kale painted apricots. I think they're so cute. We're going to buy 8 dozen and we'll do really well with them. And you're like, okay. So, right. So they sell a bunch to their employees and give as gifts. And then 6 months later, there are 7 dozen of these. And instead of marking them down and going, you know, the market's moved. We got to get out of this. No, I'm going to hold on to them because I spent so much money. And I think the attachment seems, Tom, doesn't it, that it actually goes stronger when it doesn't sell?
Yes. Well, when they go to the trade show, that's the funny part. You walk in, as I will, I go to a trade show, I follow around just looking at people and their things, and they look at each other, ooh, I like this. Ooh, do you like that? Oh, I really like that. And I will say, it doesn't matter whether or not you like it. You're totally irrelevant. It's whether or not you can sell it. That's all I'm at. Well, I would never have that in my home, or I would never ride a bike like that. Who cares? It's whether or not they want it. It's about them. Everything in retail is about the customer. It's not about you. The only thing about you is like, do you get to go and have fun, have a good time? It's like, yeah, I meet wonderful people. I provide them with things they want, and they give me money.
I'm going to add to that too, because the other one I hear business owners is, we could never sell that. It's too expensive.
Oh.
Like, why is it too expensive? Well, I would never spend it. It's like, it's not about you.
Well, what you have is people in deciding that they're going to carry an item, they sell it. Then we fall into the other classical pitfall, which is, okay, how much does it cost? And I go, what's that got to do with anything? That's totally irrelevant information. It's, how much can I get for this? And then we will look at it and go, okay, and how many of these could I sell? You know, it's like, it's a dollar. I'm going to make a dollar on it. Great. How many do I get to sell of it? Does it matter if I'm making a dollar on a $10 sale or a dollar on a $20 sale or a dollar on a $100 sale? Once I consider aspects of carrying charges, how much money that's going to cost for me to have inventory, and the cubic footage inside the store of storage, those type of things. Okay, yeah, that makes me look like a numbers guy.
Totally.
But it's the same dollar. You know, what if you could sell penny candy for a dollar? Great. Let's go for it.
But wait a minute, but I spent 4 cents for it. It would be wrong. It would be morally wrong for me, Tom, to charge more than 6 cents because it's just wrong.
Get out of retail at that point. I mean, it's like, I come from Arkansas. I can remember as a kid going with my dad and going up to Sam's First Store. Actually, that was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made in life. It was a Friday night. My dad's from St. Louis. We're riding in the car. We're headed up to St. Louis, and we're going to stop here. Okay. And I was tired. I'd been at school all day, and I lay down in the back seat and fell asleep. I did not go in and meet Sam. Okay. That is the biggest mistake I ever made in my life.
Hold on 1 sec. For our listeners, he's talking about Sam Walton and Walmart because we're in Arkansas. If you're from around the world, you probably wouldn't know that. So just bringing people up to speed, Tom.
Okay. So Sam Walton. And you know why I made a mistake of not getting out and going into the store? Because Sam has a daughter. I could have turned on the charm.
Not when
you could have met Alice,
my friend.
So that was a big mistake in life. No.
Tune in next week with more regrets from Tom Shea on this episode of the podcast. past. So why did he want to go to Walmart? Did he know, was even back then, was Sam a thing?
My dad saw it coming. I go home to Arkansas. I go back to the town that I grew up in. I did a series of YouTube videos years ago about it. And someone sent me a newspaper article from our weekly newspaper about my dad was a part of a committee. He was the chair of this committee the town had set up with to study what to do about retailing. And they had taken the highway, which used to go through the town, and moved it around the edge of town. And my dad nailed it. Folks, here's our problem. We got parking meters, we're downtown, we close up at night, and someone's going to come over to the spot. And he, damn, if he didn't pick the spot where there's a Walmart Supercenter right now, they're going to come here, and they're going to offer free parking, and they're going to have longer hours. And if we don't address this as a community, we're going to be dead. Wow, I just was fortunate. I came from a family that kind of could see things.
I'm going to put it back on you. So now here you are, and you're in the local, you know, we have thousands of listeners from around the world, whether it's the high street in the UK or somebody's downtown who this actually happened, right? So is it possible to regain that? And what do you think it would take in this day and age? You know, on the one side, you know, we just did a survey with Oracle NetSuite, and they found that more millennials and Gen Z want to go into brick and mortar stores. That was totally against what the conventional wisdom was. And they want to seek out these smaller areas. But what would it take for those smaller areas to be competitive, do you think?
The first thing is, don't play the game on price. Okay. As we used to say with the old things in Arkansas, when the bear gets in the water with the alligator usually wins. So don't get into the price war. And don't get into the war of trying to be everything to everybody. I mean, if a store could be everything to everybody, why is there a Lowe's across the street from Home Depot? Or why is Target across the street from Walmart? I remember a report at one point in time that said 30% of all the people who walked into a Home Depot walk out empty-handed. My thought is, at that point, if you could have the out parcel, you know, the piece of land in front of the Home Depot, wouldn't you want to put up a hardware store right there and just make a living off the 30% that walked out of the store having bought nothing? The idea, they come in, I can help you. I tailor my business to you.
Here in the Southern, I don't carry the same damn things that Home Depot does.
No.
And I know that.
You walk into Lowe's, you walk into Menards, and they look like clones of each other, other than one does blue, red, and gray, and the other one does orange. I mean, that's about the only difference. You got to look at the racks to tell whose store that you were in. In the South, we pronounce the word N-I-C-H-E as niche. And the expression is, the better you niche, the more you get rich. What's your niche? You're not everything to everyone who has a home or an apartment. I mean, it's like, so you're in New York, right?
Yeah.
You in the city?
I'm upstate.
Okay.
I'm so probably closer to your, I'm in a little hamlet of 800 up here now. But yeah.
Okay. So in your area, I could sell house paint. But when I go into the city, I've got no need to sell house paint if I'm that proverbial hardware store in front of the Home Depot. You know, I got to know what it is that people want. And I would have a tendency to be more into houseware items, and I would make it fun. It's like I have a friend, as I use this example, who's over in the middle part of Florida, and his hardware store, which has been there, he's the second generation, third generation I'll be in about now. His whole thing is, it's the woman's hardware store. And it's all about making it comfortable and friendly for Perfect. Everyone to come in.
And knowing who that customer is. I mean, I think that's certainly what your great grandfather understood, and you, and I would certainly expect that people who are listening on this understand, but it's hard, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to curate an assortment. It's hard to say, I don't need five versions of this product. I just need the best one. And then to your point, you know, since I'm a sales training guy, how are you going to sell it? Because I don't think, I think you would agree with this. The merch doesn't sell itself, does it?
No. And being a retailer, there is a science and there is an art to everything about selling and buying merchandise. It's not just, here's an item and how many do I buy and what do I price it at? You know, it's got to be, how do I merchandise it? How do I advertise it? What else do I have with it? How do I teach my people how to sell these particular products? What else do I get my people to sell with it? Is this a product that has other items that will go along with it? You know, there's a whole lot to it. If you really want to get into being a student of retailing and having a great time at it, I mean, mine's position is just unique. That's all I know, is just how to be a retailer.
I love that story Peter Glenn told about the buyer for Bloomingdale's, and they just send him to China and says, come back with a whatever those big cargo containers, come back with a container full of stuff we can sell next August. I don't care what it is. You figure it out and make it happen. And to have that freedom and then realize that what that gave them was this whole exclusive look, gave you all the merchandising, gave you a story behind it. It's everything retailers in 2019 are trying to create now. But the problem is you're trying to do it with the exact same merchandise that your competitor does. And instead of being creative and thinking, okay, so how do we put a spin on this that's local to Tom's store? It ends up being, well, we'll just kind of shoehorn that in around somewhere else. And I think that gets really, I think it's a punishing place to play.
It's a tough one, but it, things like if we study it, I like to talk to people about books that deal with business. I've got a very sizable library of all kinds of business books. And my sarcastic comment I say to people is the average retailer does not read books. I'm thinking that's why they're average.
We'll explore more with Tom in just a bit, but first a quick word about Field Agent, our sponsor. Field Agent is an on-demand platform that furnishes businesses with in-store information, shopper insights, and services to drive product sales, all through the Field Agent mobile app, featuring a panel of over 1.5 million shoppers. In a matter of hours, you can get photos and data from stores everywhere. If you need in-store visibility and you need it fast, Field Agent is the solution for you. Visit www.fieldagent.net/retaildoctor for exclusive content. Now let's get back to it. You know, I was at is it Bass Pro Shops, I think, and their stripes are fish on in their parking lot. They're little stenciled fish. And brilliant.
When that person comes to you to do business, all right, so using your example, you're going to the garden center. Okay, let's do things like, would you like me to come to your house and look at it for you? What's going to grow there? What's not going to grow there? Okay, so you're upstate New York. Okay, like, do you have problems with deer?
Oh, please don't get me started. Everything okay. I call it salad, what I usually plant around my house.
Yeah, these days. Yeah. Same thing. We're our home in Arkansas on the mountain. Yeah. Same thing. I mean, I plant them out there, and it's like, hey, what do I do? I'm not going to take and build fences all over everything and see if an 8-foot fence. I'm not trying to make my home look like a prison compound or something. Exactly. But if you were to come and say, here's how to do that, what other store is going to do that? Same thing with clothing. You know, what if you were in a clothing store and you invited your customers to come in and you got one of these people, I'm thinking of a friend of mine whose niche in life is, she's the woman you call in and she will look at you and say, Bob, here's the way you need to comb your hair. Okay, here's the color of shirt you should wear. Here's the type of coat. Should you have stripes and all this kind of stuff? Okay, Bob, you should not wear this. You should not wear that. Now, on all the things, this, Bob, is what's going to make you look best and give you confidence in what you're doing. What if you were to hire that person for a day in your clothing store and say, come on in. Okay. She'll give you 15 minutes. Just come in and sign up.
Absolutely.
And she'll talk to you for 15 minutes and tell you about what looks good on you, what doesn't. Are there people who are going to walk out with the information and go shop someplace else? Yes. Okay. But the other one's going to go, wow, this is neat. You know, then what do you do next month? Something else that's equally neat.
Well, I want to build on that. I'm going to build on that, Tom, because I think that is the key that when I talk to the smaller retailers, the ones who are having fun are figuring it out. I know in our second season, we had a woman, a Brighton dealer, and she talked about when the movie for Greatest Showman came out. She did a whole thing with a safari theme and circus theme, and the gift was she gave everybody one, and she did a karaoke version of the big song. And it was one of the most profitable days she had all year, and that was in the middle of the summer when conventional wisdom is, well, we wouldn't do an event then, right? Well, so I think it does come down to that creativity, and you have so much to share. What do you think the biggest challenges have been, let's say, in the last 2 years for a moderate size retailer? Because I think independent retailers can still be doing $5, $10 million. You know, they're not just mom and pops who are eking out $10,000 in a year. My most businesses are making enough that they're drawing a salary and they're investing in and not having to put their own money in. But what do you think like three of the ones that come to mind for you are, and have they changed much since you were a retailer?
Well, retailing continually changes, and that's the fun of it. It's, if it were the same thing it was back in the 1950s, my gosh, how boring would that be? You know, we see all kinds of new changes, and it's, we thought Walmart was going to be the end all to retailing. Okay, well, that's not true. And then we thought, you know, the fact people could Google it, and then now it's Amazon. There's another monster around the corner. There's always another monster, but you're living in a piece someplace else. It's like another book. Go find the book Marketing Warfare by Reese and Trout, a book in the 1980s. You know, great stories about how businesses carve their little piece of the market. Here's the biggest shift that I'm seeing in the market, and it really doesn't have anything to do with retailing. It has to do with the business owners, and that is we are so getting away from making an effort to learn how to be owners. We're glorified salespeople is what we're becoming, and we're not focusing on learning how to be a better owner. I appreciate the compliment with you're the numbers guy. That's a nickname that I love, but at the same time, it's a curse because it's like, folks, I don't just do numbers. I look at all aspects.
I know. I'm surprised you have so much great information. I thought, oh my God, it's going to be nothing but a financial analyst with a CPA. No, I'm kidding you. I mean, you have a lot of great. But here's where it comes from, though, is you also have lived it and you understand. I think what makes you different is from those numbers, you get actual insights and know where the guidelines, where are the markers in my business, and I'm either hitting or I'm not, and then can move those markers accordingly. I think we all find when we go into some stores, you know, you ask some of the basic things, what are the number of items sold per sale? What is the average transaction? How much time is the average person spending with a customer? What's the conversion rate of people who walk in versus people who buy? And people sometimes look at you like, well, we're not Walmart. And you're like, well, that's not Walmart anymore. There's conventional, good POS system should be able to tell you that, as well as a lot of other. I mean, it's not expensive, I think, to be informed these days, Tom, right?
No. Go, another book, Conversions, Mark Riske. He's a retailer out of, I think, Edmonton. And he worked for someone else at one point in time and said, folks, we're missing things. We're not studying it from the idea of how many people walk in, how many people walk out, what time of the day is it, what people are in the store, was there advertising that affected it, and making us study it. Another one's go look for what's now called Red Plum. They used to be called Advo. They're the people who send you all that stuff on Thursdays. They have tremendous amounts of information, all the demographics of your community, and you have little things that they tell you how far does a person drive to work in whatever area you're looking at. Okay, why do I want to know that? Because I want to know how late in the evening do I need to be open. And if you're telling me everyone's got a 30-minute drive, I understand why at 5 o'clock it gets quiet. They're coming home, they're eating. I need to be there to at least 7 o'clock to give them time to come home, maybe have something to eat, change clothes, and then come shopping. Those are the type of bits of information that help us to be a smarter retailer and out figure out these little things out there. We don't have to be a big retailer to do this stuff. It's just wanting to be good.
Right. Yeah. You got a desire to be good and be a merchant and desire to change accordingly. I particularly come back to your idea that you're not wed to the product. You're wed to what am I going to be able to make from that? How has the way you thought about retail changed in the past few years, right? So you used to run your stores. You certainly worked in your family business. You've certainly consulted and been with an awful lot of different types of retailers over the years. How has the way you thought about retail changed?
I am eternally optimistic about the small folks out there because there's going to be so many that continue to try it.
Guy walks out the door and let's say he's buying $1,000 worth of stuff and it was your worst salesperson that waited on him. You just think, oh, what if somebody else, a different guy or gal had waited on him? And when you have those thoughts, you realize I need to get my selling system because it shouldn't matter if Jane's on today or off or whoever they come in contact with, we should all be at that same level. And if we're not, then we're probably being too comfortable with who we hire and we like to call them all our friends, but I'm sorry, they're still employees. Wouldn't you agree with that?
That's it. And as you go to that point, the thing that started our stores, I think being so drastically different, was a command, not a request, a command by my father when he was irritated what was going on in the store. And it was get these people together and solve it. And what gave me my first opportunity to go out and teach was I was given this instruction, and we started a staff education program. And I learned very quickly, training is one thing. Education is something else. I want to educate people. I hire them because I think you got a brain in your head. I should give you the opportunity to use it. Our secret was very simple. Every other Thursday night at 8:15, because we closed at 8 o'clock, every employee was paid and required to come to school. It lasted for an hour. There was a written agenda. They took a written test at the end of the class, and the class was taught by one of their coworkers. Only after it started did I stop teaching. They saw how the format went. Now you've been there to work for us for 2 months. And at 2 months, now it's your turn. You're going to teach. And it's, wow, boy, you have to pick up steam really, really quick.
But that's a pretty progressive way of empowering your employees, two, valuing your employees, and then realizing that it may not be perfect, but that everybody's going to rise from this experience. And no wonder you were such a powerhouse. My gosh. I mean, I could go on like this. You could probably, have you written a book?
About 14 of them, but.
Oh, that's right. We'll get to that towards the end. So when you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, or, you know, you kind of lost your focus, what do you do to kind of get yourself back? What kind of questions do you ask, or what activities do you do?
Well, yeah, no hobbies
involved.
No hobbies. When things aren't going my way, for some reason, there's a piece out of a little movie that I play back in my head, and it gets me back again. Do you remember Jackie Gleason and Burt Reynolds in Smokey and the Bandit?
Sure.
Okay. Great movie. All about Coors beer going from West Coast to East Coast. And there's a scene in the movie where the son of Jackie Gleason, who is the sheriff, Buford T. Justice, the son wrecks the car, and the son goes, "Daddy, what do we do now?" And Jackie Gleason takes his hats off, slaps it across the dash, and he says, "Junior, sometimes I just cannot believe the crap that is happening to me." And for some reason, that makes me laugh. It always makes me laugh. And I go, "Okay, Tom, you know, suck it up. Let's regroup. Okay, you've had lots of great days. This is not one of them. Okay, maybe we're just going to walk out of the office for a while. We're going to take Rusty the Wonder Dog for a walk or something. We'll come back at it. Okay, we win. We know we're good at it." And I think that's how a retailer should look at it.
I think that's great. I think we have gotten trapped as a culture, as Americans. I don't know what it is. We talk only in the language of discontent. I went and I waited 4 minutes for them to come and take my order. Isn't that outrageous? Did you still eat? Yeah. So this is kind of a story. Is that kind of it? Is that all we're able to talk about? Or, you know, and we don't even notice it. You know, I had a friend of mine, she had gone to Europe, her and her husband, and they were gone 3 weeks, and they came back, and I said, "So, how was the trip? Trip of a lifetime." You know, we were in JFK Airport. We were stuck on the tarmac for eight hours when we arrived in Italy, and she just went on at least for 5 minutes. And so I just stopped, and I said, "Did anything go right on your trip?" And then she stopped. And she laughed and said, "Oh, yeah." And I think that's kind of up to all of us to realize, you know, you're not, this isn't really who you want to be. You think I want to hear this, but I want to hear how exciting it was, or what was it like to go to Venice, or any number of things. But I think we've got to start with ourselves to elevate the way we talk to each other and value positive stories, or value a story that's, you know, and then I looked over and I had forgotten this and it made everybody laugh. Great. That's fun. But we don't need to hear how other people on the world, for gosh sakes, you live in America, you're living in one of the greatest countries in the world. You work in a retail store with a roof over your head. It's not like you're a redheaded roofer in the middle of Tempe, Arizona, in the middle of August. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that have got a really tougher life. So why don't we embrace that and then have fun with it? Isn't that kind of what you're saying at the heart of it?
It is. And it's so easy to do it. There's a person out there, maybe you've read some of his books, Joseph Michelli. Joseph wrote
read his books.
Okay. He wrote Starbucks. He wrote the Mercedes books. He wrote the Ritz-Carlton. Oh, okay. He wrote the Fish Market.
Sure.
I've lost track how many he writes. Okay. But, and that's it. It's just connecting with people, and people go back to the businesses. I have found one person from the last store that I owned. I have seen one person who says they still like going in the store. Everyone else I've seen, and mind you, at this point, it's like everyone loves you on Facebook and all over on Yelp. They'll tell the truth about you. But, right? Isn't that how it happens? But people say, it's not fun anymore. You're not there. None of your staff is there. It's just not fun anymore. I don't enjoy it. And I go, yes, it's shopping's supposed to be fun and enjoyable. You're spending, okay, unless you are, let's see, buying a pair of underwear because you got to have them. Okay, buying a pair of Wranglers because you got to have them for work, buying something to fix the toilet at your house. Okay, you know, obvious reason there. They're spending discretionary money. You don't have to spend it. So if I'm going to spend discretionary money, when does the fun come? And the answer needs to be, when you pick my store, the fun's starting. And when you walk in the door, it's like, we're going to have a good time. Why? Because I've made up my mind. This is going to be a good time. Life is too short for me just to stand there and point you to items. It's down aisle 6, ma'am. Go here, go there. Like, no. Well, just point me to which aisle.
I love that idea. The fun starts because you came to my store. Well, Tom, you have been gracious with your time today. How can they find out more about you, my friend? Are you going to list all 14 books?
No. I'm going to, because my business strategy is rather unique. I tell everybody, just go up to our website, profitsplus.org. I'll brag.
What are they going to find there?
It's the largest website designed for retailers. It's been up there for, almost 20 years. You'll find thousands of pages. Of course, my financial aspect, I have 40 some odd calculators that are up there that you want to ask any question to analyze an aspect of your business, like how many square feet for something, or what's your ROI, or how about this one? If I drop my price, how many more do I have to sell to make the same kind of money? Stuff like that. Any question I've ever heard, we put a calculator up there. They're all free. You don't sign in for anything. I mean, you can sign up and read our newsletter each month. But no, the calculators are all free. There's 400 and some odd articles that I've written over the years. They're all up there.
What's the URL again for our listeners?
Profits Plus, P-R-O-F-I-T-S, like making more than one, profits, P-L-U-S.org.
Excellent. Well, you've been a great guest with us today. And any final thoughts about retail?
God bless the little folks out there. God, they are awesome people. To me, you're the bravest people out there because you roll it out there. You take a shot at your money and you love your town and you take care of the people in your town. God bless the little ones.
Excellent. Well, that pretty much does it, and I want to thank my guest, Tom Shea. You know, one thing I took away from this episode is the idea that there is a science and there's an art to everything about selling and buying merchandise. It's not just, here's the item, how many do I buy, and what do I price that for? On the next episode of Tell Me Something Good About Retail, I'll speak with Rick West, a field agent, about getting to the heart of why someone purchased one item over another using their technology, because what people recall later isn't nearly as valuable as them telling you in the moment. You won't want to miss it. I'm Bob Phibbs, the Retail Doctor. Thanks again for listening.
Tell Me Something Good About Retail is the podcast of the Retail Doctor. Visit RetailDoc.com to learn what makes Bob Phibbs the authority on brick-and-mortar retail across the world, who works with some of the biggest brands all the way down to the smallest mom-and-pops. As a listener of the Tell Me Something Good About Retail podcast, you can receive free information and guides when you visit RetailDoc.com and sign up for our exclusive weekly newsletter. For more information, to access the complete archives of past retail goodness, and to see about Bob speaking to your audience, please visit RetailDoc.com.